Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero-Law.com. Today we're going to be talking about a very important topic, and it is the coronavirus as it regards to employment issues. Look, I want to be very clear. This information is ever-changing as it's impacting employers and employees all across the country, and things change quickly. We are taping this show on Friday, the 13th, 2020. So be aware that there may be updates, and you should certainly check with your HR people or your HR attorneys or your HR consultants in regards to updates, because updates will be forthcoming. But be aware that we are going to be talking about employment issues as we see them today on March 13th, 2020. Our guest today is Peter Lowe. He's a partner with Brandon Isaacson, and we're going to be talking about coronavirus. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is a serious topic without question, and it is certainly something that HR professionals, I know you and I have talked numerous times over the last couple of days, and it's getting really serious.
Yeah, I was reflecting back, you know, as you said, it's Friday the 13th last week to having a discussion about this, and we were putting out some information for clients, and that's already changed. So, you know, everything we say today may change in the next even days, not even week. It's a continuum, but yeah, I think we were reflecting. We haven't seen anything quite like this. It brings back 9/11, of course, but really nothing on this scale.
No, and it's absolutely true. Now, I think one of the things that I can say is that a lot of stuff we're going to be talking about is standard things that have been in place for a while. Companies may have pandemic policies, or they may have, you know, guidelines having to do with time off or remote work. I think this has certainly heightened those issues. To date, I know the Congress has not yet passed bills that are going to affect this, though they are in the midst of getting ready to do so. So, you know, again, current information as we know it today. So let's start with the basics. What do we know right now in regards to how employers should at least be aware of this information, and where should they go to continue to get information?
Well, I always advise my clients not to play doctor or medical person. So I think that it's critical that, you know, you use the resources that are out there, and the most authoritative ones remain the information that's being put out by the government. I think we all see that it's constant references to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and of course, you know, our local governments here within Maine. Those are all the places to go. Certainly with respect to best practices, it's not within the scope of my expertise to be telling people what they should be doing within the workplace from a safety point of view. I think we, as employers, you know, you and I, we've all looked at that. And I think it can be the basis of our discussion today, and the value for people is when you go on to review what the EEOC or the CDC or, you know, any other government agency says, a lot of it is carefully and cautiously worded. And it's because, you know, they have to shape their guidance based on, understandably, what is the existing law and the regulations. And there are some areas, and I think, you know, it's very helpful to have this discussion with folks, where what, in fact, the government may be saying is not, and I want to be very careful about it, but there may be times where employers are wanting to put safety at the very highest priority and may be assuming some degree of legal risk. And I will probably get into it, but, you know, the legal issue that's often presented by issues such as this, particularly a pandemic, are how do you thread the needle, particularly with the Americans with Disabilities Act, the rights to privacy, the confidentiality, the limits on medical evaluations, the limits on medical examinations. And frankly, in the conversations I've had in the last week and a flurry of them today's, it's that risk analysis conversation with clients. It's a one-on-one conversation. There's not a one-size-fits-all answer. But it's, you know, and at the risk of sounding simplistic, I just was on the phone with a client who serves a lot of people in a restaurant. And I was saying, if you, at the end of the day, when you're making some of these tough decisions, are able to stand in a place to say, we were motivated by safety. We took a position that would, we believe sincerely, based on the information we had available at the time we made the decision, would promote the safety of our customers and our employees and the community. That's a pretty good place to stand. Yeah, maybe there's going to be an allegation that you violated the confidentiality requirements of the ADA or, you know, some other example. But we live in a world where eradicating all of those types of risks, is, as you and I know, is nigh impossible.
It's right.
It's but it's where do you lead with that?
So let's ask a few of the basic questions that have come up, which I think we could start with. And the first one is, so we have a situation where we have somebody that comes to work and they may exhibit some symptoms of or flu-like symptoms. Can we, as an employer, tell the person to go home, or especially if they say they don't want to?
Yeah, I'm giving the advice to clients is yes. If you as the employer have an employee who comes to work and either you observe or they self-report, or perhaps coworkers report and you speak with that person that they are exhibiting flu-like symptoms, then I think it's within the right of the employer who is responsible for maintaining a safe workplace. Under OSHA, you have to, you know, eliminate hazards in the workplace. I think in this current extraordinary time, the employer would be acting within their rights to direct that person. I was going to say ask, but it's less of a, would you mind going home? I mean, obviously the tone is all important, but really you could require that person to leave your office, factory, facility that day, in my opinion.
So let's build upon that. So you inform the you inform the employee that you are instructing them to go home. Next question. Do you have to pay them?
You know, the answer is going to be it depends.
Of course.
From a legal point of view, number one of the big factors will be, do you have a collective bargaining agreement? And so anybody who has a collective bargaining agreement and unionized employees, they're first going to want to understand what the obligations and rights and responsibilities are under the contract. Some collective bargaining agreements, for instance, say if you place somebody on an administrative leave, then you need to pay them. So if you're sending somebody home, in fact, if the employee said, I'm actually fine, and you're equivalent suspending me, think you know, that type of provision on administrative leave conceivably could come up. Without a collective bargaining agreement, it's going to depend, first of all, on company policies and companies that provide paid time off or sick leave. No doubt those are going to come into play. Sick banks are going to come into play. If somebody has run out of pay time off or sick leave, it's going to depend on whether they are an hourly non-exempt employee. So legally, I'm not required to pay an hourly non-exempt employee if they are not working and it's not covered by an applicable benefit. For a salaried employee, an exempt employee, if they work any part of a week, then these issues are a little bit more complicated, but I want to keep at the high level. You're going to pay them for that week. Practically speaking, I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue in that those salaried employees are most likely going to be able to work from home. I say most likely. In most cases, those salaried employees are going to be able to do some or a significant part of their functions at home. The issue that certainly has come up, I've read about it in the media and of course, face client questions as well, is plainly you want to avoid the situation where someone's out of sick leave or does not have sick leave. Therefore, they are not going to self-report or they're going to come in when they're sick because they need to pay the bills. So that's plainly going to be an issue for each employer to figure out. Do they provide additional sick leave? Do they provide sick leave in this very unusual circumstances? Can they afford to, of course, because at the same time, there's going to be these added costs and expenses, which everybody, I think, would want to cover if they conceivably can. We're going to see businesses clearly hit and hit heavily by the economic impact.
Well, there's no question. Look, I've talked to many clients this week and last week, and look, they all want to do the right thing. I've not had any client that hasn't said, God, I want to do the right thing. I want to have my employees safe. I want to do the absolute social responsibility thing. I want to do the right thing. There's a financial limit to what I can do. But I do know that they're talking about at state and federal level, some recovery for paid time off and so forth. So all that's great. But right now, today, I have to think about my teams and my groups. And, you know, I'm going to ask them to stay home, or I'm going to ask them to be remote. And that brings up the second question, which is, can we ask an employee to stay home and work remotely if, in fact, maybe they've never done that before, or maybe they are someone who historically says, I don't particularly like to work from home. How do you talk to that employer and say, hey, can you really ask an employee to stay home?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two elements to that question. And I'll take perhaps what I think maybe the easier one is, if there is a remote option and you're saying to that employee, I'm still going to pay you. And I'm going to pay you either because you're salaried or going to pay you for the hours you actually work, and certainly go ahead and work a full 8-hour day, but you're going to do it at home. I think the employer has that right and discretion. You may find an employee say, well, my job doesn't really lend itself to that, so it's going to be hard to do that. I think that still remains the employer, the management prerogative to say, well, we understand that, but that's what we want to do in this time. I think... And this is how time moves so quickly. The questions I was fielding, it's Friday, isn't it? Even at the beginning of this week, were really about having people come back to work. What limitations can we have? Can we tell someone, you know, who is not symptomatic but is living with somebody who has symptoms or in fact has the virus? You know, what can we do to say people can't come back to work even in this short week or this long week? Those questions are diminishing as more and more employers are going to remote work. So the question of someone coming back into the workplace still applies to many of our clients, but many others are not facing that issue so much as their entire operations go remote, or at least go remote on a test basis. I've heard quite a number of employers are testing that out. Let's see how it goes today or next week and stay tuned type of thing.
Yeah, I think certainly organizations are trying to figure out, you know, does the employee have the capability at home? You know, one of the common questions I heard was, yes, I can do the work at home, but I don't have the same bandwidth I have at work. Mm-hmm. And thus the capacity to use certain equipment or high-speed internet, I don't have that at home. And, you know, is the employer going to upgrade me or different things? You know, am I going to do that? Those are legitimate questions that come across on this. And I think that's an employer question, whether they're willing to or can or should. I think there's some questions there that come up about.
Yeah, there are. And I fielded a question about an hour ago about somebody who had traveled and wanted to come back to work, and the employer was asking about their ability to say, no, you can't come back to work right now. I won't get into more details than that. But as with so many employment law questions that you and I have fielded for many, many years, the consistency piece always comes into play. So if, in fact, somebody is able to argue that based on their national origin, they're a Chinese family, by way of example, and they perceive or believe that their limitation in coming back to work is not based on these more objective criteria or policy, but more individual and selective based on perceptions that relate to the fact that the virus, as we know, started in China, then you're in a totally different area, and you face, you know, the potential for discrimination claims based on national origin or other protected classes. So our HR folks out there will all know we preach, be consistent, you know, treat people in a similar manner who are in a similar situation. And this will be an equally important time to do that.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking with Peter Lowe, partner with Brandon Isaacson, and we're talking about the coronavirus employment issues. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we're talking today with Peter Lowe, partner from Brandon Isaacson, and we're talking about the coronavirus employment issues, and there are plenty. Peter, you know, we talked about in the first section a little about what can employers actually do and ask employees to stay home or whether they can force them to go home. One of the questions that has come up is, what do we do when an employee returns from a trip? For example, maybe they took a cruise. Maybe they took a trip to an area of the country, Seattle, Washington, where there is a higher degree of an outbreak. Maybe they went to New York. Maybe they went to the city. And there's this potential of there being larger case areas of the coronavirus there, or as COVID-19, as we call it. What can the employer do in regards to saying, hey, you have to stay home for a 14-day, 21-day period to go through this waiting period to make sure everything's okay?
I'm going to answer that one with, that's a tricky question, and I'll try and do it in layers. Certainly on domestic travel yet, I'm not aware, and it could change within minutes, of any official government guidance with respect to how to deal with certain parts of the country or even certain towns or cities. But I'll pause and come back to that. Plainly, on an international level, certain countries have been identified. And I don't even want to do the list now because the list could well change. But that's a perfect prompt for a reminder for people to check that, check with either CDC or WHO, the World Health Organization. So if you had somebody returning from Italy, and you were, they had taken a 2-week, it used to be Northern Italy, remember that a week ago?
Yes,
now it's
right.
It's the entire country, and they're ready to show back to work. Here again, in my opinion, this is where this equation of managing safety and putting safety as your highest priority, while there may be potentially some other legal risks, I think you can take the position that, and consistency would be the key, is that because you were in that location, we are either going to require you to work remotely. That So that's a fairly simple solution because the person's not suffering any loss of compensation. And really, in that circumstance, it's very hard to see how they would have any claim related to that. Or if they can't work remotely, you're not going to report to work for the 14-day period. And I don't want to be the authority on the duration. That's something that people should consult with government agencies. And if there's a company doctor is a very good resource on those types of things. And plainly, if that person is self-quarantined or you're in essence imposing a quarantine outside of the office for them, if they can use a paid time off benefit or sick leave, I think that's desirable. You know, ultimately, some people may face the position where the person is out and the person is out without any compensation, and that's clearly a hardship situation. I think as we speak, you know, there may be some congressional action being taken to try to mitigate that, both with respect to some additional benefits and unemployment.
Well, certainly we know that today, here on the 13th, you know, the president declared a national emergency, and that has with it certain powers and, you know, releases of funds. And we don't know yet what that means in regards to instructions or interdomestic instructions that have with that. And certainly a number of the governors across the state have shut down certain areas, and we know that that's all part of it. I think one of the questions that has come up about this is, so an employee finds out that they have become in close contact with somebody that may have had the coronavirus or COVID-19. So they find out that 2 weeks ago or a week ago, somebody who has just been tested and said to have the virus, and they were at a wedding with them last Saturday. And they've come to work this week, and this was just discovered today. And by the way, that employee goes to the supervisor, the boss, the HR department, and says, this is what happened. What is the responsibility of the employer at that time to deal with the fact that you now have a workplace that this person has now come in contact with many people?
Let me just address that in two pieces so I'm understanding. It's a good hypothetical. So if the person has no symptoms but has been working for a while and they have been exposed or in contact with somebody with the virus, the balancing act that I think employers need to strike is make sure that they're taking all necessary steps to have an informed population of employees while at the same time not sort of creating fear and panic. So I think if in this hypothetical you then directed this person to stay home, these are hypotheticals. Everybody should be careful and deal with each situation on a case-by-case basis, but it's helpful for them to hear it because I think it helps guide. I think you then would want to say to the employee population, the employees who work within your, let's say it's a factory, we had an employee who's been working on these dates within this facility. We have no basis yet to say that he's tested positive. He had close contact
with
somebody who did, and wanted to make sure you understood that, because then people have the choice to make decisions themselves about, you know, do they consult with a doctor? Are they experiencing some symptoms? Are they just worried? And there's plenty of guidance from the CDC and other sources on sort of a self-audit, what somebody can go and ask and inquire in order to determine what they should do next. The balancing act, and I sense you're going there anyway, is the confidentiality piece. And let's take this to a more extreme situation. Let's say I had a call earlier this week from a client out of state, and somebody has indeed tested positive and is now home and, you know, is being treated and all that. What's your obligation to the workplace? Same that you want to notify people. We've had somebody who was working here these dates, but you shouldn't name them. That's a balancing act because the employees are going to want to gauge their degree of exposure by saying, well, who is he or who is she? I'm saying don't name because I know that will directly violate the Americans with Disabilities Act, because the Americans with Disabilities Act does provide protections for all employees regarding their medical information. And plainly, if I've been diagnosed with the virus, that's my confidential medical information. I've been having discussions in my office with my colleagues, saying, boy, that's a tough balancing act. How do you satisfy your current employees and their fears and concerns and protect the confidentiality of this other employee? I suppose you can say to the employee who's been diagnosed, would you give me permission to disclose your name? Are you comfortable with that? So I can make sure those who you work with are best informed. And if that person says yes, and you've documented that, certainly reduces the risk in that situation on the confidentiality piece. True balancing act.
Yeah, no question.
About it. Where you don't want to be, and I think we all get this piece, is you don't want to be in a situation where you feel so constrained by confidentiality, you're not adequately employing your employees. They'll find out anyway.
I know with the testing side, my understanding is that while tests are still, they're working on getting enough tests out, and we know that. But, you know, in fact, most employers have maybe a doctor or a facility or a healthcare provider that they are in contact with. And they might be able to say, you know, I'm willing to get everybody tested. And is that something that an employer could say to their provider and say, hey, I'd like my entire organization tested, because we have had somebody. And I know that tests are now free based upon everything in the instructions that I've been talked about, with the federal government's come out with that state government.
Right.
It's free. It's just a matter of amounts of them. Is that an obligation the employer might want to do?
I did read, and this isn't anywhere else, it was on the CDC website, and I think this was 2 days ago, that there were 70,000 tests available in the United States, which, you know, obviously makes that type of testing right now totally impractical because there are so few. And that's straight from the mouth of the CDC.
Yep.
So, you know, plainly that number's going to change. We don't know how soon it's going to change. A lot needs to be done in that
no
regard.
No question.
Without any question. You know, so if it's an, that hasn't come up yet, I can't see that we would ever want to mandate that type of testing. If an employer chose to make that available to people, assuming those tests were available, and said, by the way, for the 50 of you who work in this facility, and we know we had one who has the virus, we will make available testing for all of you on a voluntary basis. Where this has come up, and I've seen it posed as a question, certainly now in the previous virus, was, can we take the temperatures of employees? And, you know, that certainly is could be argued to be a medical examination that would fall under the ADA, and there are fairly strict limits. I think most people, the reading I'm doing, I haven't been asked this question, are saying that's not a place to go right now. Now, in 2 days' time, things could be so different that would sound like a modest request.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting. You know, before I came on the air here today, I looked at a couple of the sites, and I found that there's the federal government just fast-tracked a brand new test that came on the market. It's going to be faster. It's 10 times faster than the current test, and it's going to be across the country, I believe, within a couple of days. So that's good, right, that they just fast-tracked this new test. And according to the, I want to say it's the Surgeon General, but it's the government doctor. Maybe I'm incorrect of who this person is, but they were talking about they expect to have enough tests within a week. And that's a long time. There's no question about that. But at least I just asked the question, because employees are asking the question about testing. Can we get our employees tested? And I guess the question is safety sensitive, right? Can fire departments, can police departments, can schools, can daycares, nursing home, medical providers? Those are all questions in regards to that, sometimes the rules don't necessarily apply the same for public safety as it does in regards to private employment. Any thoughts on those?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to be quoted right now that you could go ahead and do widespread testing. And I think that's going to be on a very case-by-case basis. It may be on an industry-wide basis. And it may change in the weeks and days to come. But right now, I think any testing that is being done is not going to be done by the employer or en masse by the employer. It's going to be the employer taking the steps to ensure that the person is not in work. And that may tie more into your ability to return to work.
So let's talk about returning for work for a second.
Sure.
Do you need or should you require an employee to get a doctor's note to come back to work?
Well, every common sense instinct in my body says yes. that it would be very, very prudent, good practice to obtain a doctor's note if one has been out, certainly for an illness that is flu or flu-like, that a doctor's note plainly would be very desirable, give a lot more comfort to employees to say, we asked for the person before they returned to provide a doctor's note. The current information that's available from CDC, and this reflects back to the I think it was the 2009 virus as well, is that they don't recommend that because they believe it's impractical, because they believe that the delays resulting from the enormous number of people trying to get doctor's notes will mean people can't come back to work.
That's right.
So that's there's no easy solution to that one, but that's right there on the CDC website. People should check that for themselves, and they should keep monitoring that because that may change. I mean, I think certainly the advice I've offered so far to clients is, if you can talk to the employee and say to the employee, could you get us a doctor's note before you come back? And the employee says, yeah, I'll go and get a doctor's note. I think that's terrific. And I'd have a lot more assurance. And I think we'd all somewhat sleep better if that's the case. Just the sheer burden on the medical system is one that we don't know yet, but some of the projections are that the providers will be swamped.
There's no question. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. I'm your host, David Chuo. We're talking about coronavirus employment issues. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chuo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, Educational HR Radio. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we're talking with Peter Lowe, partner with Brandon Isaacson, and we're talking about coronavirus employment issues. Very important topic here today. Thank you, Peter, for coming on the show to talk about this. We've talked a little bit about whether somebody can be paid, somebody goes home, quarantine, all these things. Let's talk a little tactical, because I think it's important for HR professionals and business owners to know. We know, based upon the information that we've received, that if a person or if an employees are diagnosed with COVID positive, that it is considered an OSHA reportable event. The question then becomes, is it also a workers' comp reportable event? And how do employers deal with workers' comp in terms of information having to do with this virus?
Yeah, so let's tackle the workers' comp issue first. My understanding will be that if you have an employee who has contracted the virus, certainly that fact alone, I don't believe, is going to result in a compensable injury, even if, in fact, the virus could have been passed on at work, with a qualification that if, based on the nature of somebody's position and responsibilities, such as somebody in the healthcare world, so if a nurse or doctor contracts the coronavirus through the nature of their work, with one caveat, I'm not a workers' comp expert, but certainly I can anticipate that that would be a compensable injury in many jurisdictions. And plainly, in the event that is to occur, the employer certainly wants to treat it as a workplace injury for reporting purposes. And as we know, through the workers' compensation system, your workers' comp insurer will then make a determination about whether it is a compensable injury, whether it's work-related. And no doubt the workers' comp world of insurers are discussing that in detail.
Right now, as we speak.
In detail right now. The OSHA issue, and I will confess, in the press of business in the last few days, I had the OSHA issue on my agenda to review, and then I passed it on to one of my colleagues just in the crush of business. And I haven't had a detailed discussion, but what I had heard at a very high level, so please, everybody listening, take this with a caveat, that the OSHA reporting requirement is most likely to be triggered by the contagion of the virus at work versus reporting because one of your employees has the virus. And stay tuned. We can clarify on that. We can provide more information on that. But that was the very brief conversation I had regarding the OSHA issue. And I would suggest anybody who's facing that issue, go on that magic thing called Google and put in OSHA reporting coronavirus, and they're going to have a more concise answer than I have just given, but hopefully consistent with what I've just described.
Well, let's talk a little more apple of a bit soup, if we could. Family medical leave, FMLA. Talk to me a little bit about, does that apply? Does that not apply? Does it apply for the state? Does it apply at the federal level?
Yeah. So high level, keep this simple. Yes, it almost certainly will apply on the federal level or on the Maine level. Maine, as everyone knows, has its own statute, slightly different, but in essence provides the same degrees of leave protection for medical issues and family issues. So it will apply in two circumstances. One, if an employee has the coronavirus and has to be out on a period of leave, FMLA will be the vehicle where that person may be protected under the FMLA for leave, and also caring for a family member. So there may be circumstances where a person is not at work and is caring for somebody who does have that significant health condition. So FMLA will very clearly come into play. And employers, I think by now, are very familiar with how to administer FMLA and all the paperwork associated with FMLA. And FMLA does have a return to work certification component to it. So you and I talked a little earlier about, doctor's notes upon return. Certainly someone's out on an FMLA protected leave, you would be entitled to obtain from that person information from their doctor that they are now clear to return to work. Again, caveat the availability of that information because of the press on the medical system.
So, you know, we're talking about some of the, what we would call current laws that are on the books and some of the things that apply. We know there's a lot of things in the pipeline. We've seen it on, you know, in regards to federal and state mandates. If you could give advice to employers about doing the right thing, knowing that there's pending legislation coming, which obviously will have some emergencies approvals, what are some of the things that you would think to yourself, hey, you got to make sure these things are done?
Yeah. Well, I would say, to reiterate a point that I don't think we can say it enough, in a time where, you know, they're going to face competing pressures and to some degree competing risks, safety trumps everything else. And if your decision is grounded on what's going to promote a safe, hazard-free workplace, and you know, many of our clients are also having members of the public in their facility. So that would be the, you know, sounds obvious, but it would be the cornerstone. I think secondly, and this is somewhat tactical, but you don't want to be in a position where employees are in any way feel penalized by the actions you take with respect to safety. And a classic example would be, you know, many of our clients, particularly those who have, you know, a large number of non-exempt hourly workers, have attendance policies, and attendance policies that we've come to know as no fault. You know, they're more simple to say, well, you get 9 chances a year to be absent. Doesn't matter why, the dog ate the homework, the snowstorm, the flat tire. Well, I think we're going to add to the list of things that you should not take into account would be absences from work in this current situation. And I think some of the big employers, I believe Walmart, I believe Apple, a few others have said, by the way, we're just not enforcing those types of policies right now. So you said it earlier, I think the people we work with, the employment community, they're looking to do the right thing. They want people to be safe. They want people to be treated fairly. But at the same time, you know, they've got to try and run their operation. You know, I think that would be a key component. It's a time where, you know, the larger organizations may have had policies in place already. They've never been tested. You know, the vast majority of folks out there in Maine are from small businesses, small operations. They don't have a pandemic planning awareness program. And so this is all new. And, you know, it's relying in part as well on your resources. You know, what are your internal resources, but what are your external resources? Where can you get some guidance to help you? Because you're going to be faced with some really tricky situations.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, employers are asking the very simple, basic questions. You know, what do we do now? Mm. Do we need to have hand sanitizer in our workplace if you can find it? You know, we have employers that have brought in temporary washing stations and just set up things with garden hoses so that people could really wash their hands, especially if they're in a plant or facility. They've, you know, in the wintertime, especially up here in the Northeast, some of those aren't on. Mm. So they've arranged during the day, the weather's gotten a little better, they're putting stuff outside so people can extra wash their hands. These are, I would say, some common sense approaches, right? And they want to do the right thing in terms of making that happen. How much of an employer risk is there for not doing the right thing? And saying, hey, I don't believe all this. It's just the flu.
Yeah, I think there's risks on many fronts. You know, one thing I've learned, you know, from just practicing for a long time in the air I practice is these are times we have to rely upon the experts. I want to get my information and analysis from particularly, you know, those people who have the medical expertise. And the people with the medical expertise are the ones who are I'm going to listen to most of all. And at least from my own reading, those people with a high degree of expertise in infectious diseases are saying that we have to take this, you know, with enormous seriousness. Funny phrase to use.
Yeah,
but no, so I think any employer at their absolute peril says, no big deal. And I haven't heard anybody.
No, I haven't either.
But if in fact there's a sentiment out there that, you know, this is just a blip, I think that would be a grave mistake. Going to the legal level, under the general duty clause of OSHA, employers are required to provide a safe work environment, simplistic statement, for their employees. I mean, OSHA are going to have their hands full, but if there was a clear-cut example of just what you said, where somebody said, business as usual, and they had some serious infections and people got very ill and people even died, you know, plainly there's some significant exposure and problems other than, you know, not only, you know, first and foremost, you want to keep people safe, but from a legal and compliance and regulatory point of view, I can see plenty of desire to make an example in that circumstance.
You know, it's interesting. I thought I would just, because I think it's important that it can't be emphasized enough, the CDC recommended and continues to recommend the following steps. And I think I say this because I think it's important to keep reminding everyone. You need to wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol if soap and water are not available. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue and then throw it in the trash. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces. I would say this is such common sense, but we don't necessarily always do that stuff every day, do we? And I think it's important that employers talk to their service providers that clean the facilities and really up their game. You know, I certainly know people who work in the public sector and private sector, and, you know, they're having trouble getting some of the supplies needed to do what we're talking about. That may be a reason to send people home. There may be a reason to do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I agree. I mean, if you, those can't be stated often enough as reminders. And if for reasons of supply or other practical reasons, you cannot provide those types of protections to employees, then there's your answer that you should not be operating if you can't meet those fundamental requirements, or you shouldn't have people within that facility if you can't do that.
No, and I think it's a basic conclusion. So, Peter, I leave you with this one last hypothetical because I think that it sums up how people feel right now. Let's be honest. There are a lot of people scared. There's a lot of people who are nervous, frustrated. Anxiety is high, no question. The media and all the announcements of emergency actions and pandemic has people, and I will say this, rightfully high in anxiety. There's going to be employees that come to work or call or text that say, Peter, I love you as an employer, but I'm not coming to work. I don't feel comfortable around people. I'm really scared and I'm really nervous. What do you do?
In this current climate, and again on Friday the 13th as events stand, I would certainly not mandate that person to come to work. And I think my approach, and again, this will be so case specific because we can talk if time permits, if there's more than one person. But if it's one person, I'm going to say, look, you know, I understand that. I'm not requiring you to work right now. We certainly believe we have done everything to provide a safe work environment. But if you, I'll respect your choice. And if that means you take some vacation or you take some paid time off, or if you have none left, you know, the person may elect to stay home and not be paid, and perhaps they can obtain benefits some other way. I think that's going to be the right approach in many circumstances. But, you know, you could get the situation where a business or a healthcare facility or a residential home doesn't have anybody, you know, if all five people who sure. work there say, actually, he's not coming in. I don't think I'll come in either. You know, what do you do then? I don't have an easy answer for that. One thing I will warn people about is if you have a collective group of people who are saying, I won't come in because I disagree with you and I think it's unsafe, tread very carefully, consult with your experts, your resources, because that does get into a whole different legal world, which is what we call concerted activity. So if employees have a reasonable belief that there's some safety issue and they're taking some concerted action, and saying, you know, it's like a walkout, I wouldn't simply roll up my sleeves and say, well, you chose not to come in, you're all fired. I think that would be injudicious at this point, and you'd want to consult with your lawyer and find out what are my options in that particular situation.
Yeah, I think, and certainly we know that if it's areas of public safety or medical professionals, there are different rules that apply in regards to having to come to work in different areas. And so we're talking about more private practices at this point, correct? Because that's just a different set of rules.
And just, I know, very time is, there may be a reasonable accommodation requirement. Let's say I'm somebody who has a compromised immune system and I'm not sick right now. We'd say, yeah, you know, if you have medical, they disclose that and say, just like any other accommodation, provide us with a doctor's note. And you will provide the reasonable accommodation. And that
it might be working at home, to be, at this point, in many cases, the only answer.
Or a leave if they can't work at home. So there will be some people who, you know, because of medical reasons but not the coronavirus, are unable or feel unsafe, or in their doctor's opinion are unsafe in an environment where there may be somewhat higher risk.
Peter, thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, we're talking about coronavirus employment issues. We're talking with Peter Lowe, partner with Brandon Isaacson. Great topic. Again, this show is being taped on 3/13, on Friday the 13th, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We want to make sure people are very cognizant that this information that's provided, that is date-stamped at this point. So just be aware that going forward. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. Thank you so much for being with me today. I'm your host, David Chulo. And we will be right back with the HR Tip of the Week. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Liz Johnston from Verrill. Navigating what to do when you have a worker who is injured on the job can be complicated. First, an employer must comply with workers' compensation procedures, as the employee may be entitled to lost wages and payment of medical treatment for the work injury. But depending on the injury, other employment laws may also be implicated. For example, if the employee has a resulting disability, they may qualify for protections under the Americans with Disabilities Act, triggering an employer's obligation to participate in the interactive process to determine reasonable accommodations. In addition, if the employee needs time off from work due to a work injury, that leave might be protected by the Federal Family Medical Leave Act and any state counterparts if the employee meets the qualifications required. It's important to be mindful of how each of these laws might be in play and communicate with the employee and exercise policies accordingly. Please contact a member of Verrill's Employment and Labor Group to discuss further.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.